From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of November, 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, the cash grain market with Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, the weather with Ed Keezer, he's at T-Storm in Chicago, well, actually, Ed's in Columbus, and Pete Levitt, who normally would join us, is not available again today, and a special conversation I held this morning with our own Gary Schnicki from the University of Illinois about the end of the October price setting month for crop insurance, particularly the revenue products, RP and GRIP HR. We'll have more on what those products might pay out as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
In Chicago on a Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat at $8.69.5 on a closing price, up 5 cents for the day. July at $8.80¾. That's your harvest month, up 7¼ for next year. The hard red in Kansas City finished the harvest month July at $9.17. Again, a close there, up 4½ cents. Closes from the corn pit as well. December contract $7.51½, down 4¼. March at $7.53½, 3½ lower, and the May corn up a half at $7.53. July corn at $7.39½, 4½ lower. September up 4½ at $6.66. And December corn of next year in 2013 at $6.39¼, up 2¾ for the day. November beans, $15.59¾, 12¾ higher. January at $15.58½. Up 9¾ in the March at $15.34¾, 11 cents higher. May futures, $14.95¼, up 17 on the day. And the November of next year at $13.53, 8½ cents higher. Bean meal at $4.84.40, up 2¢. Bean oil for the day, 39 higher at $50.55. Live cattle futures finished the February at $129.22½, 65 cents lower. November feeders at $144.65, down $1.65 on the afternoon, and the February lean hogs at $84.15, a settlement price 32½ cents lower for the day. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures are trading the December contract at $86.90 a barrel, up 66 cents. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $2.63. That's just about unchanged. Ethanol at $2.39½, down 4½ cents. And the difference between the two is just about... Oh, that can't be right. It's just not showing up at the moment. So we'll have another number for you later. December heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.07, 3¼ cents lower for the afternoon. And December gold at $1,715.50 an ounce on a settlement price, down $3.60. The U.S. dollar at 80.04 is up 0.13 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area yet this afternoon. We should see sunny skies and a high near 55 degrees on a northwest wind at about 11 miles an hour. It'll gust all the way this afternoon to 16. Partly cloudy this evening, around 30 degrees for a low. A northwest wind at 7 miles an hour tomorrow. Sunny skies and 51. The north wind will continue at 5 to 7 tomorrow evening. Mostly cloudy and a low of 36. Winds out of the east by then at 5 to 8. And then on Saturday, a 40% chance of showers. That'll come before 1 in the afternoon. Central time, mostly cloudy, a high of 50 degrees. And a northeast wind at about 9 miles an hour. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and a low of 34. Sunday, partly sunny and a high near 50 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy and a low of 33. Monday, mostly sunny and 49. Partly cloudy on Monday night and a low of 33. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour. Pete Levitt is away again today, but Ed Keezer with T-Storm Weather will be with us as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
It's the first day of November. On the phone line with us here on the Closing Market Report to take a look at what happened in Chicago is Dan Zwicker. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana with CGB Enterprises. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Okay, so what do you see in the charts that interest you most this week?
Well, the thing that I spot right away is a head and shoulder bottom formation in soybeans. You can kind of call the early October break probably as a right shoulder, the mid-November low as a head, and then the break that we had here on Monday, and then 2 or 3 days there is just kind of walling around as a right shoulder. Now, that's not confirmed yet. You have to have, I'd say on a lead futures basis, we're going to have some closes above 0.1575. Those are the we had a couple reaction high points there at 1574.5 or 1574.25. So, in order to confirm that head and shoulders as a legitimate bottom and a formation that you could project a higher move on, you'd need to have some pretty good closes above this 1575 area. The January contract, I think, is high. Is 1576 that you kind of need to clear. And I think then that all of a sudden, if that would be validated, then that kind of opens the gates from a technical perspective anyway for November beans to take a run at the 660s. On a lead futures basis, the 1676 area is the 62% retracement level of the fall decline. So, those are two areas that I think a lot of technical traders will be kind of looking at, but we got to have some fundamental ammunition to get up in there. And right now, I'm not too sure we have that.
Now, these are patterns that are showing up in the daily charts, but not daily. In the weekly charts, correct?
No, okay. Correct.
And
correct.
What's the difference in the power between the two?
Well, weekly, I mean, anything, the bigger the chart, probably the more powerful the formation is, but the longer it takes for it to develop. Whereas when you're in a daily chart situation, if this is any good, it should develop here within the next week or two. Now, if it was in a weekly deal, it could take a month for it to develop. And if it was in a monthly chart, it could take a half a year for something like that to develop. So it's just a matter of looking right. at how small you want to look at the picture.
On the short term, then for the daily, is there fundamental support for the head and shoulders bottom?
Well, the first thing I would say is maybe the expectations that everybody's looking for a bigger production number maybe is not realized on the November report. We're going to see FC Stone here in a little bit. We're going to have Infoma Economics out tomorrow. And then USGA, I think, is next Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe USGA doesn't confirm a bigger crop, that would give you the ammunition to do that, because the market is anticipating maybe another bushel increase in yield, national average yield, and if that would be the case, then that would happen. The other thing would be problems in the South American growing season. We do have probably too much rain in the northern region of Argentina. Heavy floods, delayed plantings. There's some already maybe talking about a 5 million ton cut in their soybean production and a 5 million ton cut in the corn production, but it's still early. And but if you would have some problem there, maybe that expands, gets worse. that could trigger the move. Or, like I said, maybe USDA doesn't confirm that we have a bigger crop, and the crop stays pretty close to what the November report was. That would maybe have the fuel to kind of punch it on up in there.
Soybeans are short enough that it just seems probably to you that this market should stay at least steady, if not go higher then.
Yeah, that's my guess. I mean, China it was a big buyer here earlier in the week. They took advantage of that hedge fund liquidation break there on Monday. And that's why the market has just basically found firm. It's just continued firm the rest of the week. So China continues to be a good buyer. We're the only supplier in the world for a while. And like I said, if you would get South America, some hiccups going on in the South American crop, things could change in a quick order here.
Any patterns in the corn that you've been watching?
Well, corn market, kind of been watching kind of a wedge-type formation. We've had a couple lows down here at this 732 and a half on December corn. And then we've each rally high has been a little lower than the previous one. So you've kind of got a little four-week downtrending line in play here. Today, we were kind of poking our nose above that. It kind of comes into play here around this 759, 760 area. But it looked like, when the day is over with, that there was enough resistance there to turn it down. And we ended up, closing corn down here roughly 4 cents or 5 cents. So that's going to be kind of a hard spot. I ultimately think it will be penetrated, we're probably going to have to see some production numbers. For the most part, the trade, I think, is kind of geared up for maybe a little smaller production number. We'll see whether or not USDA gives it to them. If we got a little smaller production number, a tighter balance sheet, then maybe that might be enough to kind of poke it on up there and find some buy stops and technical buying that could maybe propel a 30, 40-cent rally type thing in corn market.
December corn touching the 50-day, I think, today on the top side. But the 50, the 20, the 10, the 100-day moving averages all converging together in kind of that coil pattern. Does that spell good or bad news?
Well, I think the way the thing is teeing up, now I watch 25-day rather than the 20,
right?
And it's been flattening out over the past 3-4 weeks as the market basically went flat. So if you could get corn to start closing a little higher in here, it wouldn't take much to get that 25-day to cross over the 50, and then that would be a pretty good buy signal from the moving average crowd. The moving average crowd will probably start probing alongside the first close above the 50-day. But once you got that, then it'll be a matter of time that you'll get the 25-day to cross over for a solid buy. And then, like I said, if that would all kind of come into place here, you could maybe pop this market 30 cents pretty quick.
Wheat futures, what do you see?
Same old, same old. Wheat futures basically remain in their sideways to lower trend that they've been in basically since July. The only thing that I can say that if you imagine enough, you can maybe find a little head and shoulder bottom formation inside this sideways to lower trend. And then the price action basically over the past 4 weeks is probably more consistent with a sideways market than one of a sideways to lower. It's kind of like in the corn market, we just need some kind of fuel here to get it to go. I suppose further deterioration of the weekly crop rating levels. Wheat's got the worst crop rating levels or the worst start in over 20 years. I think before long you're really going to see Black Sea wheat supplies dry up. And I think that alone could start bringing some export demand to the United States. So I'm a little optimistic that demand is going to start improving in wheat. And if we don't start getting some good rains into the wheat growing areas. We're going to go into dormancy with some pretty poor rating levels, and I think that adds kind of fuel to the fire. So I'm kind of in the camp that wheat should kind of fall into some kind of seasonal pattern and maybe strengthen into the winter months.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He joins us from Mandeville, Louisiana, on this Thursday afternoon.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
For Farm Doc Daily, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist, is here to talk about the harvest price for corn and soybeans and the implications for crop insurance. October is a crop insurance price-setting month, which we don't think about very often, Gary, but why don't you go through what that means to begin with?
October is the month that we determine the harvest prices. Harvest prices are based on settlement prices of CME futures contract. The average of the settlement prices of the December contract for corn was $7.50, and so we have a $7.50 harvest price for corn and a $15.39 average for the November contract, so we have a harvest price of $15.39 for soybeans.
And then you have to use that in combination with the February prices that are set for crop insurance, and most producers are familiar with those numbers.
Yep, and we have the February prices, or the projected prices, which was $5.68 for corn and $12.55 for soybeans.
It influences two different crop insurance products?
Yep, the harvest price is used in determining revenue payments. This year, most people have either selected RP, Revenue Protection, or GRIP HR. Both of those products have a harvest price increase clause in their agreement, so the higher harvest price means their guarantees go up. So the higher harvest prices are actually going to increase payments this year on yield losses.
Take me through a revenue protection product.
And this year, because the harvest price is above the projected price, there will be payments on yield losses, and a yield loss this year will be the guaranteed yield minus the actual yield, and the guaranteed yield will be your APH yield times your coverage level. But just to give an example, let's say you have a 200 bushel APH yield and an 85% coverage. Multiplying those two together gives you 170 bushel guarantee yield. If we have a 150 actual yield, there'd be a 20 bushel yield loss, or the difference between 170 and 150. Those 20 bushels will be priced at 750 this year. So larger yield losses, if you have a 50-bushel yield loss, it'll be 50 times 750.
And just to be clear, it's not only the higher price. It's really the yield loss that makes the difference. And there can be payments made with the revenue protection products if prices are really low.
That's correct. It's a revenue product. And if the harvest price is below the projected price, lower prices can trigger payments. It's harvest revenue is calculated yield times harvest price, and the guarantee will be the higher of the harvest or projected price times APH yield times the coverage level.
The October harvest price setting month has influence on the GRIP HR product as well?
Yep. GRIP HR uses the same projected and harvest prices as RP. This year, GRIP HR is going to make large payments around the state. We don't know what those are yet because it's a county-level product, and the 2012 county yields won't be released till March of next year. But we estimated the payments on a CRD level, crop reporting district level, because we do have estimates of the CRD yields. And those payments, if that product worked at a CRD level, some CRDs would receive payments for corn in the $860 range. The two southernmost regions would receive very large payments. So we know that GRIP HR is going to make some pretty large payments across the state. It won't match those CRD levels. Some will be higher and some will be lower, but they're going to be large.
Large meaning very large.
Very large. If they bought a 90% coverage level at a maximum protection level, you know, $800 plus payments in certain cases. we estimated that for the center part of the state, and they're in the $500 to $600 range, and the northern part probably in the $300 to $400 range for corn. Some of the southern CRD, or some of the CRDs for soybeans won't receive payments, the northern two, and we have payments approaching $200 in that case. So just to give you a feel for the range for GRIP HR.
Gary, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist at the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason for Farm Doc Daily.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report, the Thursday edition. On the phone line with us to look at the cash grain market, Matt Bennett of TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about basis in your area. Many have been thinking that this is where the play is going to be made for corn rather than the futures market. Do you agree with them? And at what point during the year do you think that'll happen?
Well, so far we haven't seen much movement recently. I know we've talked several times here this fall that we've been running overs all the way through and still are. I mean, we're running a nickel to 10, nickel to a dime over. But I think the timing for the play on this corn market is probably going to be after the first of the year, basis-wise. I think there's going to be a lot of your processors trying to originate corn that are going to have a hard time doing so, especially, the higher quality corn, corn with no alpha toxin.
But they're going to have to go outside of our region to do that?
That's correct, and people are already doing so, and I think that presents an interesting dynamic in that, basically you're pulling bushels away from areas that you don't traditionally pull them away from, and so whoever usually pulls those bushels is going to have to go somewhere else to find them, and that's artificially going to create really strong basis levels in those areas.
Yeah, so the basis play may come, but it may not be here. It could be Minnesota and the Dakotas and parts north of us. Wisconsin,
yeah, I think so. And I think, whenever I'm looking at this, if basis is extremely strong in another region, obviously it's going to affect us. Now, I don't think that you're going to have such a dynamic basis play on just regular 2012 corn, in this area necessarily. But if someone did have corn that they were sure that had low alpha toxin levels, by all means, I'd be holding on to it.
How about for soybeans?
Well, the soybeans, I think it's going to be kind of a function of several things. Obviously, we have a lot of soybeans on hand right now, basically with a big crop, bigger crop than what we thought we were going to have. Most farmers are fairly happy with their soybean yields, and so the demand is awfully strong. And I think one thing to keep in mind is that soybean meal is going to be put into some rations where maybe some of the DDGs in certain regions just flat aren't, you don't have the quality. And so I think we're going to chew through a lot of soybeans. And after the first year, I do think basis levels could get hot again.
And your bids for the day?
Cash corn would be 760, Jan would be 768, cash beans 1546, and Jan 1560.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll talk with Ed Kieser about the agricultural weather forecast.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National French Fried Clam Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1841, the first wagon of settlers left Independence, Missouri for the trip to California. In 1863, George Parker was born, an American inventor. He perfected the fountain pen and founded the Parker Pen Company. In 1873, Joseph Glidden began manufacturing his new invention, barbed wire, which opened the Western Plains to large-scale farming. In 1939, American biologist George Pincus showed off the first rabbit successfully conceived by artificial impregnation. Pincus removed an egg from the ovary of a female rabbit and fertilized it with a salt solution, and then transferred the egg to a second rabbit, which gave birth. In 1943, Alexander McAvey died, an American meteorologist. He invented and patented devices to protect fruit from frost, and he was a pioneer in the exploration of high-altitude air conditions. And in 1997, Victor Mills died. He was a chemical engineer who worked for Procter & Gamble. Among his many accomplishments, he improved Duncan Hines' cake mix, inventing a process that made the cakes less lumpy, perfected a process for preventing oil from separating in Jif peanut butter, and developed a process that cut the production time of Ivory soap bars down from 7 days to just a couple of hours. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of November, a Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason from U of I Extension. Ed Kieser is on the phone line again today. Another week later after he was here for the first time with T-Storm weather. Thanks so much, Ed, for filling in for Pete Levitt again. We do appreciate that.
Well, my pleasure.
Before we get to that, I do want to say that I talked to Pete again this morning. As I suspected last week when he called and said he wasn't available, Pete was in the employ at that point of, and still is, I'm sure, of the electric and gas companies. And what Pete does at that point is to help them put their assets or trucks and people in place in order to make sure that they can get in to clean up the storm. And so he was busy last week with Sandy and trying to make sure the assets were there so that they could turn the electricity back on. And I'm sure that's what he's, again, busy doing today. It's been a rough week in the East Coast, hasn't it, Ed?
Yes, he's certainly in an area that experienced lots of power outages and problems there in southern New England. So I'm sure he was kept quite busy.
Yeah, and he's near Boston. And he told me that his he had power, but some neighbors had gone out of power, but he had not suffered much. Let's turn your attention, Ed, to the weather forecast. You want to start with the wheat-growing regions of the United States for me?
Well, it's an easy forecast. It's going to be dry for at least the next week. It does not appear that any rain at all will be coming into the major wheat-producing areas until perhaps the weekend after this weekend, and that would be around the 10th and 11th of November, and that's not a certainty that far out. So that's problematic in South Dakota. I was looking at the numbers this morning. The emergence number there is up to 23%, but average is 88. So that's way behind average, and that's because the ground is so dry. And in Nebraska, emergence a little better, but still behind. About half of the wheat crop in Nebraska is rated as poor or very poor, and even more than that in South Dakota. So some very big problems of dryness there. Conditions not quite as bad farther south, but over the last 3 weeks, little to no rain at all across Kansas, Oklahoma, and the wheat-growing areas of Texas. So the entire wheat belt is very dry, and that is a big concern.
And then move to South America, the growing regions in Argentina and Brazil.
Well, Argentina, of course, over the month of October was super wet, and planting is way behind schedule, and that's also a big concern. A couple of spotty showers here and there in central into the southern production areas of Argentina, but not much. We'll have a few spotty showers over the next 4 days. It'll actually be a little bit drier, I think, early next week, but there are indications on all the computer models that another wet weather system comes in toward the end of next week, so that's still a problem. In Brazil, southern Brazil around Rio Grande do Sul is turning dry and will be dry over the next week. Still some thunderstorms a little farther north and bigger thunderstorms popping up now over Mato Grosso do Sul and Mato Grosso. And it looks like the areas that have been dry in the northernmost production areas are going to start to pick up showers and thunderstorms on a more frequent basis here over the coming week.
Ed, thanks so much for taking the time with us, and you have a good week.
You too.
Mm-hmm. That's Ed Kieser. He's with T-Storm Weather. They're based in Chicago, Illinois. Ed, of course, is in Columbus, Ohio. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois.
For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.